Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Frenzied and Sustained.
Frenzied and Sustained!
In this week's podcast for a post-stupid society, our brainy lecturer looks above our heads and find it covered in enormous galaxies, nebulae, and enormous gas clouds just waiting for a little application of technology to allow us to see them. In Songs Under the Microscope, we look at the business case for putting diamonds on the soles of your shoes as a way of stopping you slip-sliding away. It is more cost-effective than you imagine. In this 10th anniversary edition, we have a special pull-out feature of a brief roundup of local news across the frenzied and sustained diaspora. In A Sauce, My Kingdom for a Sauce, we have the recipe for Lindy's favourite sauce. And in literally the last section, we examine the scandalous under-treatment of psychological pathologies in 100 Acre Wood. And I need you to adopt the brace position, as we will be revealing that Winnie the Pooh is demonstrating signs of Prader-Willi syndrome. You are listening to Frenzied and Sustained, and I am Ian Spector, and this is a
brainy lecture.
Deep space astrophotography. In season 4 of Ronald Moore's 2003 series of Battlestar Galactica, model number 1 is grumpy with his human sensing equipment. He says, "In all your travels, have you ever seen a star go supernova?" "No? Well, I have. I saw a star explode and send out the building blocks of the universe. Other stars, other planets, and eventually other life. A supernova. Creation itself, I was there. I wanted to see it and be part of the moment. And you know how I perceived one of the most glorious events in the universe? With these ridiculous gelatinous orbs in my skull. With eyes designed to perceive only a tiny fraction of the EM spectrum. With ears designed only to hear vibrations in the air. I don't want to be human. I want to see gamma rays. I want to hear X-rays. And I want to smell dark matter." And frankly, skin job number 1 has a point. There is a stunning, colourful, exciting night sky above our heads, with features many times the size of the moon covering the entire night sky, and our rubbish gelatinous orbs are not sensitive enough to perceive them. We just see the pinpricks of light that are the stars and planets and Elon Musk's satellites. So these fabulous photons spend millions of years travelling to us, and when they enter our eyes and hit our retinas, they are too faint to be recognised. You might think that a solution would be to get a telescope. One of the most disappointing things I ever saw was the view through a powerful telescope. The little smudges in the sky were a little bigger, but the galaxies and nebulae were still unimpressive black and white smudges. Telescopes for visual viewing are really solving the wrong problem. They make the smudges a little bigger, but they are not solving the problem that we are not receiving enough photons. We know the technology that allows the correct number of photons to be captured. It's a camera. You set the exposure such as a 60th of a second, and that means that the camera will let light in for a 60th of a second. The darker it is outside, the longer you need to be harvesting your photons. And that is exactly how we solve the problem of our puny human eyes. But as the objects are really, really dim, our exposures can be up to 10 minutes or even longer. Now, the trouble is that the stars do not stand still. In the northern hemisphere, the sun, moon, and stars all appear to rise in the east and set in the west, because the Earth revolves on its axis in the opposite direction from west to east every 24 hours. The movement we therefore observe is not their movement, but our own as we go zipping along the surface of the Earth towards the east and those celestial objects pass us overhead. The North Star, Polaris, in Ursa Minor, is useful for illustrating this point, as it is a pivot around which the entire northern sky seems to revolve. If you stand facing north, your right hand will point due east and your left hand due west, with the ground beneath you and everything on it moving from your left to right. Therefore, if you look up at Polaris, you will see the stars rotating in the opposite direction from right to left, anti-clockwise or counterclockwise, once every 24 hours. In the same way, if you were to face due south, the stars would naturally appear to rotate from left to right in a clockwise direction. In other words, while the sun, moon, and stars travel from east to west, the direction we see them moving depends entirely on which direction we are facing at the time. Facing north, stars rotate anti-clockwise, right to left. Facing south, stars rotate clockwise, left to right. Facing east, stars rise in front and set behind. Facing west, stars rise behind and set in front. The problem to solve is how to keep your object stationary in the camera as it flies through the sky. Thankfully, technology is our friend. There are computerized go-to mounts that have a database of the skies which, if you tell them where it is starting from, it can follow an object. The simplest of these mounts is called the Altitude Azimuth Mount, or Alt-Azimuth. The big problem with these is that they can follow an object, but ignore the fact that the object itself is rotating as it goes across the sky. What we use for astrophotography is usually a German equatorial mount. This is accurately aligned with the Earth's rotational axis, roughly in line with the pole star, and then a motor rotates it at the same speed the Earth rotates with extreme accuracy. I said many of these objects are huge, so we do not need huge magnification. Something like a 400mm focal length is great. Whilst not essential, I do use a dedicated astrophotography camera. And the reason comes down to the constant war we fight, and that is against noise. By noise, I mean visual grain on the images. There are several methods we use to reduce noise, but reducing temperature is a key tool. The camera is a digital camera without a lens, as the telescope is the lens. It has a sensor like any phone or camera. The sensor has photosites that can receive the exhausted photons. Remember, the photons are not really exhausted because they travel at the speed of light, so they don't know they have just completed a 20 million year schlep. They think that they just popped round the corner. If you travel at the speed of light, time does not pass. The photocells on my camera can hold 50,000 electrons. My camera is extremely efficient and has a quantum efficiency of 80%, so 80% of the photons are converted into electrons. But look at the minuscule numbers we're talking about. 50,000 electrons is just about nothing. And my 50,000 is considered a really deep well. So, my camera has a built-in cooler and will cool the sensor to 35 degrees Celsius below ambient. As I use the clear summer nights in southern France, often that only takes me down to minus 5, where I really like to be at minus 15 or below. And cooling something so far below ambient can cause condensation on the glass cover, so that then needs to be heated. Also, the front element of the telescope needs to be heated, as that is a dew magnet. So there is a lot of heating and cooling going on. But essentially that is the equipment, although I do strap a computer to the telescope to run the tracking application and control all the photography. But the technology works so well together. I tell it what I want to photograph, and the mount slews across the sky, takes a photograph of it, plate solves to interpret the stars to determine if it's properly centered on my target, it will make any adjustments, then start my session. I may take 20 images at 10 seconds, 20 at 30, 20 at a minute, and 20 at 2 minute exposures. This will give me 80 images. Of course, I'm not outside in the heat with the mosquitoes, I'm inside in the cool with an Armagnac watching each image appear on my iPad as it arrives. When that is finished, I will tell it to go after another target and spend another couple of hours on it. If I wake at 4 o'clock in the morning and it is still dark, I will see what nebulae have risen and send it off on another project. This is such a great use of technology. The computers are analyzing the stars to find out what I'm interested in. The mount will track a guide star with incredible accuracy, making tiny adjustments to keep the scope pointing in exactly the right position. The computer controls the mount, the camera, the heater, the coolers, and focuser. The reason we take so many different photographs is to later combine them all into one. This allows the software to differentiate between genuine celestial objects and noise and gamma ray bursts and satellites and aircraft. It uses mathematical averaging techniques to remove items that do not appear on the majority of the images. By taking images of different exposure lengths gives me high dynamic range. The shorter exposures allow me to capture the brightest objects without overflowing my photosites with more than 50,000 electrons. The long ones give me the faintest objects, and the software works out what pixels from which image should be used in the final image. But with some equipment and only a modest amount of knowledge, you do get rewarded by some of the most astonishing objects you can imagine. And they are just hanging out covering our night skies with bright red clouds of ionized hydrogen, eerie blue clouds of dust being illuminated from bright young stars behind them, turquoise from the oxygen. But these items are huge and literally cover our night sky. Don't blame me for your puny gelatinous orbs.
End of brainy lecture.
And now, songs under the microscope. This week's songs under the microscope are both by Paul Simon. We have Slip Sliding Away, and then the solution to this lack of adhesion, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. Now, this may seem like an extravagance, but it is in fact a very cost-effective and practical shoe construction methodology. Nice shoes have leather soles and heels. These feel wonderful, but have the disadvantage of having very poor grip, especially in any condition other than a dry pavement. They also wear out depressingly quickly. The cost of raw black diamonds is £10 per carat. That would be around a 5mm diamond. For complete coverage, I'm anticipating 5 diamonds in the heel and 10 on the sole. That will cost £300 for both shoes. For me to send my pair of Church's shoes back to Church's in Northampton is £290 for the Crown collection and £140 for a Goodyear welt, plus postage and packing both ways. The heels may last 6 months and the soles may be a year if rotated. I called Shirley Bassey in the week and asked her how long diamonds tend to last, and on average she calculated forever. Now let's turn to Paul Simon's particular observation. The nearer your destination, the more you'll slip sliding away. This is a reference to most cities' snow clearing policies. They give priorities to the main arterial routes, then the smaller roads, but by the time you reach your destination, the roads around housing developments perhaps, they may well not have been cleared at all. So literally, and this is something that I have personally observed, the nearer your destination, the more you're slip sliding away. In fact, what is implied, but experience also supports this, the nearer your start of the journey, the more you're slip sliding away as well. But with our new diamond soles, we can leave the car and walk up the ice-covered pavements. Of course, this bejeweled footwear is nothing new. Dorothy's ruby slippers from the 1939 film of The Wizard of Oz sold for $2 million in 2016, and the ruby's positions were all on the top surfaces of the shoes and did nothing to improve the adhesion. But they made up for this by allowing the wearer to travel anywhere they wished, presumably without any slipping or sliding, particularly as they neared their destination, typically Kansas. Stuart Weitzman added 1,420 diamonds to a pair of sandals worn to the 2007 Oscars by Anika Noni Rose, me neither, and sold them for $500,000. Another Stuart Weitzman shoe was worn to the 2005 Oscars, the $1 million Marilyn Monroe shoe. After the Oscar, Weitzman replaced the diamonds with replicas and still sold the shoes for $1 million. I doubt the replacement will have the long-wearing practicalities of my £300 diamonds on the soles of her shoes. In my research, it turned out that Stuart Weitzman seems to spend all his time pebble-dashing women's shoes with diamonds. He slathered 1,800 diamonds onto Diablo Cody's... I still don't know who these people are. Diablo Cody's pumps in 2008, and she refused to wear them. Too common? He smeared 464 onto his platinum gold stiletto in 2002, and in 2003, Stuart Diamond Geezer Weitzman made his own ruby slippers with 643 Burmese rubies and are valued at £1.6 million. Again, no magic nor improved traction. Next we have Stewie's Cinderella slippers worn by Alison Krauss to the 2004 Oscars with 565 diamonds plus a 5-carat amaretto diamond that by itself is valued at more than $1 million. Next we have the diamond shoe designed by New Zealand designer Catherine Wilson with 21.8 carats of diamonds, and they were sold for $408,000 in 2013. The lower price presumably based on their inability to transport you anywhere magically. In fact, I'm now looking at loads of jeweled, bespettled shoes, each one more grotesque than the last. Apparently, you can get any woman's shoe, dip it in honey, then dip it in a vat of diamonds, and slap it on the foot of a country singer singing about poverty, a simple life, and a profound sense of irony. The only jewel-based footwear for you to consider are my 30-carat, 300-pound, ultra-hard-wearing, ultra-high-grip shoes. Talking of shoes, check out this week's advert. Do you love pounding the treadmill at the gym but hate turning up to work sweaty? New treadmill roller skates. Tired of the person next to you always setting his speed faster than yours? With new treadmill roller skates, you can mash that speed up to 11 whilst threading a needle and mixing a martini. From the company that brought you barbell helium balloons and ecstatic electric bikes is the all-new freewheeling gymnasium-rocking treadmill roller skates. For the first 500 purchasers, we are throwing in a stay-damp gym towel to keep in your bag impregnated with a concentrated sweat scraped from the armpit of a Ukrainian shot putter, so no one at work will guess your secret. Skate your way to greatness with treadmill roller skates. Now, a quick roundup of the local news across the frenzied and sustained diaspora. In Malmö, Sweden, Vornhem's falafel has been voted best falafel in Malmö. In Malta, Daniela Yachting require an experienced deckhand, so if you have all your STCW certification, email admin@mydaniela.eu. New South Wales, Australia has been hit by the worst plague of mice in decades after a bumper grain harvest. German police have solved a 9-year-old burglary after DNA found on a half-eaten sausage matched that of a man detained in France.
Vraiment? Non, j'y crois pas.
Police in the western town of
Schwelm
said that the snack belonged to the victim, and the suspect, a 30-year-old Albanian, appeared to have helped himself to a bite during the 2012 break-in. But Schwelm police said that the suspect remains free, and he may yet escape punishment as the statute of limitations on the burglary has expired. Matt Llewellyn was packing his groceries into his car in the car parking lot at Anchorage Costco when Raven swooped in to steal the short rib from his cart. Often running the scam in pairs, one Raven will distract the shopper whilst the other steals. Llewellyn said the piece of meat was about 4 by 7 inches, but did not mention if any sauce was stolen. Naturally, we would recommend the sauce Albert with fresh horseradish. Margaret Mary MacLeod MacLean is applying to the Crofting Commission to assign the tenancy of her croft at 19B Breezecleet, Isle of Lewis, Scotland, to Elaine MacLeod of Lurbost. Extra marks awarded, of course, to the most Scottish name ever. Alphamart announced today that all its minimarts across the Philippines will remain open during Holy Week. The Finnish Association of Interior Architects, SIO, has elected Yuki Arbi as the 2021 furniture designer. According to the jury, furniture designed by Yuki Arbi is sympathetic and playful, with an emphasis on polished details and usability. Looks like it's going to be an especially hot summer in Hyderabad, with temperatures already having breached 40 Celsius before the end of March. So, the Hyderabad Times has the world-exclusive scoop that it is going to be hot this summer in Hyderabad. A poll in New Zealand asked if all of Auckland's shops should be allowed to trade on Easter. 58% said yes, 39% said no, but the people I most want to sit down to discuss matters are the 28 respondents who answered, "Unsure, it's too complex." What aspects are too complex? If the shop is on the event horizon of a black hole, will that mean from our perspective it will never close and thus exploiting a loophole to remain open on Christmas Day? And now...
Feeling saucy in me, the shallot. A sauce, my kingdom for a sauce.
Sweet chili sauce, Linda's favourite. No cooking needed for this sauce, so just strap in and hang on, as this is going to resuscitate your fish. Two red chilies, deseeded and finely chopped. Two garlic cloves, peeled and sliced. Pinch of salt, tablespoon of caster sugar, 2 tablespoons of fish sauce, 1 tablespoon of rice vinegar, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 spring onions, trimmed and finely chopped. A handful of coriander leaves chopped, and the juice of 1 lime. Place the chilies in a mortar with the garlic, salt, and sugar. Pound until smooth, add the fish sauce, rice vinegar, and olive oil, and mix with a spoon. Stir in the spring onions, coriander leaves, and lime juice. Taste and adjust the seasoning, adding more sugar if necessary. Pour into a serving bowl.
Miam, miam!
And now, literally the last section. The scandalous undertreatment of psychological pathologies in Hundred Acre Wood. We begin with Pooh. He is demonstrating signs of Prader-Willi syndrome. According to the NHS website, typical symptoms will include an excessive appetite and overeating, restricted growth, learning difficulties, lack of sexual development, behavioural problems such as stubbornness. Prader-Willi is caused by some missing genetic material on chromosome 15, and this causes changes to the hypothalamus, which regulates growth and appetite. Pooh clearly demonstrates these symptoms, obsessively eating honey with no self-regulation. He wears no trousers, yet there are no obvious genitalia, hypogonadism. Self-admitted bear of very little brain. Pooh's obsession on honey and his repetitive counting behaviours raise the diagnostic possibility of obsessive compulsive disorder. Pooh is also repeatedly described as being a bear of very little brain. It is hard to diagnose microcephaly, as his head size appears normal for a brown bear. One must wonder if he has had a hemispherectomy. As we have discussed, hemispherectomies at an early age lead to minimal development problems, but those done later can cause deficits. The entire A.A. Milne catalogue was silent on hemispherectomies. We have seen a number of drawings of Christopher Robin dragging Winnie downstairs headfirst, and a traumatic head injury cannot be ruled out. As you will recall from our essay on Tintin, repeated head traumas can cause pituitary gland damage, leading to hypogonadism and lack of sexual development. Tigger displays all 5 criteria for ADHD in DSM-5, with 7 out of 9 symptoms of inattention and 8 out of 9 for the hyperactivity-impulsivity symptoms. He should be started on Adderall XR 10 mg in the mornings and should be adjusted up to 20 mg per day if ADHD symptoms are not adequately controlled. And what of little Piglet? Poor, anxious, blushing, flustered little Piglet. He clearly suffers from generalized anxiety disorder, characterized by his catastrophizing and jumping to conclusions. Had he been appropriately assessed and his condition diagnosed when he was young, he might have been placed on an anti-panic agent such as paroxetine and been saved from the emotional trauma he experienced while trying to trap heffalumps. Eeyore has a major depressive disorder, characterized by his psychomotor retardation, anhedonia, consistently depressed mood, low energy, and sad affect. Eeyore is clearly based on Shakespeare's Jacques from As You Like It, and in turn Shakespeare clearly got that idea from Douglas Adams' Marvin, the paranoid android from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In fact, this is obvious if you read Jacques' Act 2, Scene 7 speech as Marvin.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and entrances, as one man in his time plays many parts, his act being seven ages. At first the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. Then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and his shining morning face, creeping like a snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, sighing like a furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress' eyebrow. Then a soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard, jealous in honour, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice with a fair round belly with good capon lined, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances. And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank and his big manly voice, turning again towards childish treble and pipes and whistles in his voice. Last of all, that ends this strange eventful history, is second childishness and mere oblivion. Sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. Life. Don't talk to me about life. I'd say thistles, but nobody listens to me anyway.
Eeyore would benefit greatly from an antidepressant, although it is hard to imagine that Prozac is the only thing standing between him and a sunny disposition. Owl is obviously of high intelligence and has an advanced vocabulary. In spite of that, he has terrible spelling and one must wonder about dyslexia. In view of the above under-treatment of the neurodevelopment issues in 100 Acre Wood, I suggest some new adventures. 1. Now we are on 6 milligrams of paroxetine. 2. Christopher Robin leads an expedition to the psychotherapist. 3. Piglet meets a heffalump, but then remembers to take his thorazine and it disappears. 4. Pooh goes visiting and gets some cognitive behavioral therapy. And now it's time for anagram poetry. Perhaps the most popular Beatles song ever, Yeasty Red. Yeasty Red, yells a trembled mouse saying, roar oaf, hear a ghoulish wonk, toot yeasty hotter, shine bereaved, oily yeti. Ends duly, fable shit in enema mouth, seaward he shot maned river hog, reached meaty soy, ends duly. Honky-toothed widow, hanged heady slow nuts, missing goat-herd wino, freeloading snowy Tory. That is the end of literally the last section. It is also the end of this week's podcast. In next week's Frenzied and Sustained, Our brainy lecture looks at the Fermi paradox that asks, where are all the superintelligent aliens? Why have they not made contact yet? Especially as they may have had a 4 billion year head start on us. A Source, My Kingdom for Source gives you a foolproof way of creating your own fabulous mayonnaise and thus freeing you from the tyranny of Hellmann's. In literally the last section, we look at the world's longest shampoo commercial, otherwise known as the film Out of Africa. We introduce a new section on sports that definitely should be in the Olympics, that we are calling Sports That Definitely Should Be in the Olympics. And I finally want to thank you all for listening. Even though as I record this, only 8 episodes have been aired to you, you have transported this podcast into the top 15% of all podcasts in the world. There are currently around 2 million podcasts available, and I am so delighted that you have found this one. Please let's have a big push and see if we can launch this into the world's top 10%. Just recommend this to one new person this week and threaten to turn their life support system off if they refuse. In return, the usual currency, you get a joke.
What do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? Irrelevant.
Frenzied and sustained.